Welcome back. This is going to be a very interesting conversation. There's a new wrinkle, a new development in the coronavirus sweep that is rolling from sea to shining sea in this country. And Dr. Nyman's going to bring that up to speed for us in just a couple of moments. Let me just do a little headline rundown for you to give you an idea of what's up there for you right now in headlines. In light of Super Tuesday, I don't want this to be missed. There's some very big stories today. King County, Washington now, 9 dead, known cases in Snohomish, Washington, up to 27. CV, coronavirus, is confirmed in Wake County, North Carolina, ex-King County, Washington. What does that tell you? That tells you that somehow the virus from Washington State made its way to North Carolina. So it's spreading, and as I've said, it likes air travel. Thousands, ultimately, but right now the government in Oregon, the state of Oregon, is willing to admit that hundreds of Oregon residents are likely already infected with the coronavirus. This is a state health officer. That's an understatement, but we'll let it stand for what it is. Iran has just released, how many, 5,000 was it? Jail prisoners? No, I think it was more than that. Let me check. Hold on. This is important. I got to go find this here. Adding to. Okay. Iran temporarily releases not 5,000, 54,000 prisoners in an effort to somehow slow down the coronavirus from spreading into the jail population and the prisons there. So Iran turns out 54,000 jailed prisoners, at least temporarily. New York emergency room doctors said there will be thousands of confirmed cases in the U.S. by next week. The U.S. is now going to start screening, whatever that means. What does it mean? It means eyeball the passengers, check them for fevers, or maybe just ask them, have they been feverish lately? U.S. to screen all air passengers now from Italy and Korea, South Korea. It's getting to be where you've got to get off the dime and do something here. It's actually too late, as we've been telling you. New York school closing linked to coronavirus community spread. New York planning 1,000 coronavirus tests per day. There's a lot going on. All right, Henry, welcome back here. The recombination aspect is now in play and on the table. It was there before, but now we've got genetic proof of it. Tell us more.
Well, the recombination is kind of the same thing happened with SARS. And when you get the virus into the human population and you get it at high levels, then you have humans that are getting dual infections. And when they have dual infections, meaning they have more than one version of the coronavirus infected at the same time, then they start to recombine. And when they start to recombine, you see these polymorphisms jumping from one lineage to another lineage, and you come up with a new lineage that's got part of one and part of the other. And tonight, the sequence was released from the woman in Kings County, one of the earlier ones, the only one that wasn't a community transmission. She had been to South Korea and come back to Washington. And that sequence was released tonight, and it's got one of the polymorphisms that was seen in Orange County. And then it had, which was one lineage, that was kind of distinct. It wasn't the lineage that had the ORF8 mutation. And then it had another polymorphism that was from Arizona, or from Phoenix. And that one was in that lineage. So it took polymorphisms that were on two different lineages and put them together in this one. And it looks like these types of combinations are not only present in South Korea, but they're also present in Italy. So you've got recombinants out there now, and they're kind of wreaking havoc in that they're...
Henry, would you please define recombinants for us just a little bit? What does that mean? We've got a prototype virus, and what happens to it to make it a recombinant?
Well, what happens is the viruses kind of start picking up mutations, and they form different lineages. So you can see, well, this particular mutation usually goes with this other one, and that defines one lineage. And then you got some others that are in another one, they're another lineage. So they're the same backbone. I mean, they're the same sequence that was found in Wuhan initially, but then as it evolves, it starts picking up some of these changes. And actually, that's one of the arguments of what it has is the argument that this wasn't man-made, because these polymorphism, these mutations that it picks up, it picks them up because the original virus wasn't clean. It was a natural one. It had a bunch of different versions in it, and different versions kind of get cloned out by going into different people. So one kind of emerges in one person, and one kind of emerges in another. But what happens when you have those different versions in a new species, like they jumped now from either bats or anteaters, and they've been found in both. The closest sequence is actually in an anteater, and that's 99% identical to the one that's in humans. But when that happens is these polymorphisms start bouncing around. And it was real obvious in SARS, when the physician who was treating patients in Guangdong province, he got infected by several versions of the virus because he was seeing several patients. And then when he came to the Metropole Hotel and the virus all started with him, a single host, but they went into different people and different versions of what he was carrying showed up in one patient that went to Singapore, and a slightly different version was in Toronto, and a slightly different version was in Hanoi, and another version was in Hong Kong, and then they started mixing and matching, and that's what's going on in this virus. And so recombination happens when one of those lineages goes into a one person, and that same person gets infected with another lineage. So they have two different lineages floating around in the same person, infecting the same cells. And then what happens when the virus copies this genetic information, it starts copying one lineage, and then it kind of hops off and goes on to the other one and finishes copying on the other one. So you've got one part of the genetic information comes from one source, and one part comes from another source, and that's called a recombinant. So it's got a little bit of information from one and a little bit of information from the other. And it's under this selection pressure. So when you get these different combinations and you're in a human, if one of them gives that virus a little bit of advantage to grow better in that human, then it goes to the next person, and it kind of outcompetes the ones that haven't recombined. And pretty soon, the recombinants are dominant. And some of these polymorphisms that are in this case that's in Washington, in King County, Washington, came from South Korea, and they've got a lot of activity there. So they've got people that are infected with more than one version, and recombinants are emerging from that. And there's some of the aspects of those that are in South Korea are also in Italy. And those are two of the countries that are basically doing all this exporting. They've got this high level, and it's not so much South Korea, it's more Italy and Iran. And Iran's got some of these same changes also. So Iran and Italy have these different recombinations, you know, recombinants, different combinations of those mutations that allows the virus to grow more efficiently. And apparently, it gets to be more deadly. I mean, the reason Iran is letting the prisoners out of the prison is they've got the virus in the prison, and they don't want it to spread any further.
Well, they claim that the 54,000 that were released were tested and were negative. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, okay. They were negative, and they had five that were positive, and they didn't release them, but it was already there. And if they left them all in the prison, it would spread in the prison. So it wasn't that they were releasing 50,000 people that were infected. They were releasing them before they got infected.
Well, they
because
knew they were
knew
headed
that
toward
if they
a,
stayed, right, if they stayed in a 100%. Crowded conditions in the jails, that it would go through the whole population, and then they would all be infected. So that was a preventative measure to keep the virus from spreading there. And if you take a look at the numbers, remember a little over a week ago, there were reports that Iran had 50 dead, and they said, no, it's only 15. And the guy that said that it wasn't 50 ended up getting infected himself. And anyway, the bottom line is the latest numbers out of Iran is that they have 77 dead. So they're above the 50. And they've actually got another column. They're keeping track of the recovered. So they've got 77 dead, and they got 291 recovered. So they've got a case fatality rate, you know, around 20% or so.
It's up there.
Those are the outcomes. And then if you look at Italy, Italy is actually even higher. Italy has 79 dead with only 160 recovered.
So these numbers
are getting higher, and the numbers are getting revised on the case fatality rate. There was a physician that was on the news, I think yesterday, it might have even been this morning, that was saying, well, you know, we thought that the case fatality rate, now the rate they're talking about is a rate that doesn't count everybody that's infected, whereas for SARS or MERS, they only counted the pneumonia case. So when they count the ones that don't have pneumonia, of course, the case fatality rate drops considerably because 100% of the people without pneumonia end up surviving. I mean, they don't normally even go into the hospital. They have a cold, and they represent about 85% of the infections. So what they had said was the case fatality rate is only 2%. And they said, well, it's really less than that because, you know, he doesn't know whether they were getting optimal care in China. And that original number was based upon results in China. And they had so many cases, the hospitals were overrun, and that the case fatality rate was probably a little bit higher than it would be outside of China. Now, the problem with that statement is there's no guarantees that the situation's going to be any better outside of China than it was inside of China once the numbers start going up. They're going to have the U.S. and Europe and the Middle East are all going to have capacity issues. They don't have enough beds to take care of everybody that's going to have pneumonia. And so they are going to have pneumonia cases that may not be getting ideal treatment because they don't have enough physicians and they don't have enough beds. But that, apart from that, forget about future overcrowding. The virus is becoming more deadly. So today they revised the number. He said it was lower. He said it was 0.8 instead of 2. Well, now the new number is 3.2. So the case fatality rate is going up even when you count the non-pneumonia cases. And so they're starting to realize that there's a major problem here. And there were a couple of quotes that Tony Fauci said in an interview with Politico that was actually late last night.
I saw it. And, I ran it.
And one of the things he said is, doesn't think we're going to be getting out of this unscathed. And then he said, could be really, really bad. And then he also said, looking back on this, we can say, boy, that was bad. So
That's a very remarkable thing for Fauci to say.
Exactly.
I've never heard him talk like that.
Exactly. So, and Yi Guan did the same thing. When he went to China, he said he's been through these outbreaks before. He's seen H5N1 in Hong Kong, and he's seen H7N9, and he's seen SARS. And he said that this was, he was really frightened by what he saw in China.
Now, this is your friend, Li Guang, right?
Right. This is Yi Guan from Hong Kong. My kids can tell you what his lab phone number is because he used to call me all the time and they used to pick up. But anyway, for our listeners, they still know what their phone number is 17 years later. But go on.
That's funny. Let me remind our listeners that Henry Nyman worked with the best during the SARS outbreak. That's when Henry first became actually familiar with this program and coming on it regularly way back then. That's 17, 18 years ago now almost. But he knows these people. He understands how they think. And for Anthony Fauci to say that was a shock to me because I don't know the man. But to see him talk like that, I've never seen him speak like that. And I've seen a lot of his statements. So not good.
And so I'll get to it because they did a conference call today. And, I'll jump right to it. The conference call did not go well. I mean, the CDC released an MMWR, and the MMWR was what the results were for doing some of the contact tracing and what kind of results they were getting on positives and how many people they had to test. And, you know, how many contacts they tested and what the frequencies were. And the frequencies were very low. It was, I think, less than 1%. It was like 0.5% positives for testing contacts. And it got up to 10% with testing family contacts. And those numbers were so low that one of the first questions was, well, do you think that this means that the virus really isn't that contagious? And I said, no, well, this is kind of early and it's a small sample size, and I don't think you can extrapolate that. And the way I read the results was it was one of two things. It was either A, this was very early and the virus was adjusting to its new host and the viral loads were lower, and there wasn't quite as much transmission, and it was harder to get positives because the viral load was lower. Or two, the test wasn't really working very well, and they were potentially getting a lot of false negatives. And that may be why the contact tracing failed with the first case, which was the one in Washington, who was in mid-January, who flew in and started developing. He flew in from Wuhan, and he started developing symptoms.
Right.
And he went to the doctor, and he turned out to be the first positive in the U.S. And I kind of looked back, and initially he said he wasn't symptomatic when he flew over, and then he kind of said that he had some minor symptoms, and he was kind of out and about for about 5 days before he ended up at the doctor's, and he said it really wasn't out and about that much. And the CDC kind of did their contact tracing, and they said, oh, not a problem, everybody's negative. And then 6 weeks later, one of the first community cases, it was a high school student in the same county, gets tested, and they put out the sequence, and the sequence is the same as the original. And so they asked about that. and I said, the idea that they matched, and that's because that indicates the virus has been circulating for 6 weeks, that's just a hypothesis. And it's, that still remains to be proven. And, they didn't really find that sequence much in China. And That's true, but that's the whole point. The whole point is this wasn't a common sequence. This was a sequence that it was a common lineage, but it had one change that was very rare, and it wasn't commonly found in China. It was a very rare change, but that change, they cloned it, and they had two clones that they released the sequences on, and both clones had that same rare change. And in fact, both clones were pretty clean. They just had two markers that divide the lineage, and a third one, which was rare, and it was in both of the clones, and it was in the original, and it was that rare marker that was also in the high school kid. And the fact that it's rare, and 6 weeks later, and it's the same county, and it's the same rare marker, it says it's the same virus, and that it has been circulating there for 6 weeks. So they had a real rough time of it. And so they came out with a press release at like 6:30 tonight. And they kind of went over the stuff and they said, well, you know, as of, whatever, noon today, we had the following viruses, and they kind of ran out the list, and they were missing some, including the one that was announced this morning. I'll talk about that in a little bit of detail as soon as I get done with this. So they went through those, and then they came out and said, well, there's a study in China, and it indicated that 16% of the cases were serious. And this could be a problem. That there are mild cases, and the majority of the cases are mild, but it did have 16% of the cases were serious cases. And then they also were trying to justify the disaster as far as the kit, the diagnostic kits and their failures and their recalls. And
right.
And they said, well, we don't want to talk about the past. We're just talking about looking forward. We got this cleaned up, da, 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 da. And they said, well, what about the contamination? Well, you're talking about this Axios article that came out and said that the lab was contaminated and that's what the problem was. And well, that's still under investigation. They didn't deny it. They just kind of flexed it. And so it was, not the best. And so they kind of added this press release, kind of giving an indication they're going to try to be a little bit more transparent and come out with these statements and probably do it on a fairly regular basis. Oh, they asked one other question, which you mentioned last night, which was, how come you're not putting out how many tests you've run? That going to be
that
hidden?
And some other things too.
And they said, no, we're not doing that. We keep tabs on those things. And then they kind of switched it over from how many tests you run to how many positives you found. And they went into, we update that every day, and it might be a little bit behind because if we update it in the morning and there's a few other cases after we've updated it, we don't go back and update it a second time. We put that in the next day. So there, we might lag a little bit. And they actually say in the press release that if there's a discrepancy between their data and the state labs, you should go with the state labs. And they also said that, they're going to be, and they also said that there would be a lot more testing going on because the state labs are going to be doing their own testing. And they would anticipate that if they do a lot more testing, they will get a lot more positives. So they kind of said, it's not going to be a surprise to us if you get a whole lot of positives, and it shouldn't be a surprise to you. And that's to be expected. So they kind of put out the warning that, A, the virus has got a, well, separately, they said the virus has got a higher face fatality rate. on this press release, they said that, you know, 16% of the cases were serious cases. And they said a lot more to come. And I think this lot more to come was really kind of the tipping point. But there's been a bunch of these tipping points. But it's another tipping point that happened today. And that was New York announced a community case in Westchester County. And the Bronx. I mean, he lived in Westchester County, and he worked in Manhattan, and schools were closed in Westchester County as well as in the Bronx.
That's AOC territory, and you can bet that she's not walking the streets there. She's probably moved further away.
You can bet that this was an Orthodox Jewish community, and this the Westchester County is the same one that was basically not getting vaccinated, was having these high levels of measles.
Oh, that's the part. Okay.
And then they basically, I mean, the health department said, if you don't have a vaccination, you're not going to school. You are not allowed to have your school open and accept students that are not vaccinated. And they kind of, you know, got in line and got the vaccine and got the measles outbreak under control. And now they're being told, well, you know, coronavirus is kind of floating around. You know, that may be circulating in your community, and they will go bonkers. I mean, Cuomo got up there and said, we are going to spend $40 million and we're going to upgrade all of the labs in the state, and we are going to do 1,000 tests per day. And he's not joking. They are going to do 1,000 tests per day. And they'll go into those schools that are closed, and they'll start testing anybody that's symptomatic in there, and all you need is a cough. You don't have to have pneumonia. You just have to have some symptoms. And they'll start running those tests, and guess what they're going to find? They're going to find positive. And they're going to find a lot of positives. And they're not all imported cases. These are going to be community cases, and they're going to shame the rest of the country into doing the same thing. And they're all going to gear up, and everybody's going to start doing the testing. And, I mean, I ended up doing this one post out there where these were people in high-risk areas. They were within 10 miles of where community spread was ongoing. And one of them worked in a long-term care facility. And she said that, you know, she's had breathing difficulties, and she thought she would do the right thing and make sure she didn't have the virus, and she couldn't get tested. And another mother said that she was coughing, her 10-year-old was coughing. They went into the emergency, and they could not get a test for the coronavirus, and they were also near where community transmission was going. And these were just posted today. And so there are a lot of people out there that have symptoms and can't get tested.
Can't get a test.
And that's gonna change. And they are gonna get tested. And they aren't all gonna be positive. Some are gonna have too low a level to pick up, and some are gonna have a cough for some other reason. But a lot of them are going to be positive.
There are a lot of cases out there, Henry, walking around.
Right,
lots.
Right, and that is going to be the sea cake. When they start doing this testing and they start realizing that these people, they're going to go to something like a school, and they're going to get a couple positives, and then they're going to get some more positives, and then they're going to do contact tracing and see that the family members are also infected, and that these aren't necessarily people that are going to die, and they're not necessarily people that are going to get pneumonia, but they're people that are infected and can very well pass that infection along. And they already got infected by somebody in the same position. And then they're going to realize, when they say, well, we don't want anybody coming here from Italy, because look at all of these cases in Europe and now all of these cases in the U.S. that came from Italy. And it's true. I mean, Italy has a bad virus, but people have been coming to the United States from Italy forever. And the reason they're picking this up in Europe is because they're testing people with symptoms who came from Italy. Mm-hmm. So they're getting positives in the people that they're testing. So prior to a week or two ago, they were only looking for people coming from Wuhan or from China. And they weren't doing anything with people coming from Italy, or they weren't doing anything with people coming from Iran. And so now they're targeting Italy and Iran, and for good reason. I mean, I read how many people have died there and how many positives they have in a very short period of time. And so there is good reason to be concerned. I mean, I took a look at Iceland. Iceland's got up to 6 cases now. So they got 6 cases, and how many came from ski resorts in Italy?
Or Iran?
For Iceland, they were all Italy, and it was 6 out of 6.
So all 6.
Well, Canada's got a bunch from Iran, and the first case in New York was from Iran. The point is that the second case from New York is community spread. The only traveling he did was Miami. So I don't know which is worse, that it's community spread and he picked it up in New York, or he actually picked it up in Miami. And now there are all these snowbirds that are flying back to New York anyway from Miami. And they're not going to say nobody from Miami can come. And that was the other example that you mentioned. They got a case. The first case in North Carolina, was from Seattle.
That was a big story in my world. When I saw that, I went, uh-oh.
They had contact with somebody in that long-term care facility. So, I mean, they know exactly how they got infected. And so they got infected in Seattle, and they flew to
North Carolina.
North Carolina, right. They flew to North Carolina, and they were
That long-term facility reminds me of a miniature Corona Princess.
Well, it's going to be worse because they have serious underlying conditions. So they've got
they may end up
with
80-90%
fatalities. They went up, and one of the cases they announced it. I mean, they had 6 going in. 5 of them were from King County, and the other one was from Snohomish. So they had 6, and then today they had one who actually died last week, but they died before they could test. So they had, samples to test.
They did a post-mortem? I see.
Right. They would have had samples. They knew what that patient had. They knew they had pneumonia.
Well,
they had this major outbreak in this area.
They got the fire station shut down. They got EMT people now that are in quarantine. You're looking at a maybe 80%.
Right. They got
90%.
A quarter of the fire department
that's
in quarantine
out of
right
service.
Now.
Yes.
Right. And the same thing happened in Northern California with the healthcare workers. The case that they also couldn't test was in Solano County. They couldn't test them because the patient hadn't traveled anywhere. It didn't meet the definition. And in Solano County, in Vacaville, they had no idea that this person had the coronavirus, and they didn't really have that good of PPEs. And then when they transferred to UC Davis and begged to run the test, because they had to get the test from the CDC, and they got turned down initially, and then they pleaded their case and ended up getting approval to go ahead and send the samples and do the test, and that was positive. And as soon as it was positive, they knew that their healthcare workers at UC Davis were at risk because they had no idea what this patient had, and they knew that the healthcare workers in Vacaville, and they put them in quarantine and tested them, and the ones in Vacaville are positive. So they've got three or four, I think, that are positive now, and I think they're still testing. And that's what it does. When they don't test, it puts these healthcare workers and first responders at risk.
Big risk.
Because
stupid.
They
it's
have
so
no
stupid.
Idea that they have no idea that the virus is circulating in their community, and they get pneumonia cases all the time, and so the fact that they've
we
got an elderly person with pneumonia.
We could end up losing a significant percentage of our first responders, our frontline healthcare people, who at least have to go into quarantine. And
right,
this is
right.
really, they should be protected
so 2 weeks,
above everything.
They're 2 weeks in quarantine, and they're, they're short staffed because they've got.
Oh, absolutely.
I think in Kirkwood, it's a quarter of their fire departments in quarantine right now.
That's not good.
It's big numbers, and it's a lack of testing. And I think, the reason I said it was a tipping point today is that I think that New York will carry through on this. I mean, I know they will. They've already announced it. They can't really not do what they said they were
going to
do.
They've already closed schools in New York. Of course,
right,
you saw that.
Right, right. I know. They had those two in counting, one in
you watch how many schools got shut down.
I mean, these are the same schools that they said, you get your measles shot or you're not going to be open. And so, the community is going to respond in mass. They're essentially, and now that they've got this potential virus that's going through their elementary schools, they're going to go nuts. Why haven't you tested?
Meanwhile, in South Korea, the government there, so smart, they have literally opened up and are opening more drive-in testing centers.
You don't feel good?
You don't have to have someone say, well, you can be tested or you can't be tested. You can drive yourself right in and get tested. That's what we should have that here. If we had any leadership, we would.
Well, that's part of how they identified this high school student. In Seattle, there's a Seattle flu program. Uh-huh. It is basically kind of crowdsourced. They make it very easy. If you don't feel good, go ahead. I think they can mail in their samples. You get a collection kit, you mail it in, kind of just like the home DNA testing type of thing. You go and you send in the sample, and they'll go ahead and they'll tell you whether you got the flu. And then as part of the project, mm-hmm. that if you're negative for the flu, they give permission that they can go ahead and test to see if you have the coronavirus. They don't have permission to make that diagnosis. So, they're not approved for doing that, but they are approved for research purposes. And that's how they found out. They found the high school student is he had flu-like symptoms. He was negative on the flu test. They ran the test for the coronavirus. And he was positive. And then they got the sequence and they found out he matched the first case in the country. So they are starting to do that. And they're getting all the universities involved. This is something that doing a PCR test is not a new innovative type of a thing. That's routine and especially for research labs. So institutions that basically focus on research, every lab in the facility can do a PCR test. And to make the test, it's cookbook stuff. I mean, it's just like I said yesterday, it's like putting out a recipe for baking a cake and everybody's got an oven to make that mm-hmm. cake. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. They put out the recipe as to what sequences they're using to do the PCR test, and they make the primers and they run the test. And so they already got the oven to do the cakes. You know, they can make a lot of cakes because everybody's got an oven. And you can do a lot of PCR tests because everybody's got the PCR incubators. I mean, you have to heat it up and cool it down, heat it up and cool it down. You have to cycle it. And they can do all that. They've already got the equipment for doing the cycling. All they need to do is make the primers. And they've already got in-house labs that will make the primers. All they have to do is give them the sequence. And the sequence is published. You know, all they have to do is, you know, forward the recipe.
There are over 100 health labs.
Got it.
There are over 100 health labs around the country that can be doing this.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to do. And that's what New York is doing. They're basically saying, we'll buy the oven. We need more cakes. So, you know, they're basically... we'll get you the cycler. You can basically plug it in there. We'll train you on how to do this. We'll send you the kits. All you got to do is take the sample, extract the DNA, put it in the well, and send in the results. Yeah.
I got a question for you.
That is going to happen. Okay.
Question. Email question. Please ask Dr. Henry Nyman if the recombinant viruses are in GenBank. Are they there yet? Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's mailing me them. No, they're in GSAD for sure. And I mean, that's where I saw it tonight. And it usually takes a little bit of time for GenBank. It's public, though. I mean, if you sign up for GSAD, you can see that sequence tonight. It's there. And they're a little bit slow on the other ones. Those are the only two out of Washington. I mean, those are the only two recent ones. The original ones is in GenBank. I mean, the first case.
It's not some people say GenBank like genetics, but it's GenBank.
Yeah, you can say it. You can say it either way. I mean, it doesn't have an E. It's GenBank.
Got it. Okay. B-A-N-K. Here's something I want to do, and then I want to step aside again. I want to repeat what Anthony Fauci said. And he said, you've got to walk the fine balance of making sure you continue to tell the truth. And the truth about coronavirus, he said, and I quote, I don't think that we are going to get out of this completely unscathed. I think that this is going to be one of those things we look back on and say, boy, that was bad. So these are words to the wise, all of you. This is not a joke. Wash your hands. Exercise common sense. Right? Please. And now it's funny. Americans are suddenly prepping when the horses have run and they're out buying everything they can. We knew this was going to happen. Americans, they just won't prepare. So anyway.
I saw a list for Costco in Seattle, and that's where they had their headquarters, and they gave a list of things that they were out of, you know, and they gave, you know, hand washing, toilet paper, you know, water, and it was a pretty long list. And this were things that you can't go to Costco and pick up. They are sold out. And this is in Seattle, because, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, everybody there is going around coughing, and they're kind of wondering if this cough is related to the coronavirus. And I think everybody kind of knows what the answer is. They just haven't done the testing. So,
I don't think they want to do the testing.
The whole town would go into a panic.
The whole city.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they've got this you know, flu program. Seattle Flu, I think, is the name of the program, and it's they are going to test. I mean, they've got these positives. Like I said, I was a little surprised that they've only got these two recent sequences. They've got the high school student, which is the match, and they got the one that I just said is the one that was imported from South Korea. And so I think that they, they will have the other ones. And that's still an open question, is whether the virus that was there originally is what's in that nursing home, that long-term care facility, or whether they've got a bunch of different viruses floating around there. And it, I mean, the one that's imported is not a good example, because that one.
Well,
you know,
I think we should
they know where that virus came from.
Give credit where credit's due, and the Oregon Health Department at least has made the announcement that the gentleman involved, whoever gave the announcement, said that he believes that there are hundreds of people infected in Oregon. That's a gimme. That's yes, and he said it in public, and that's to his credit.
That's kind of what the CDC is saying now. I mean, they're not saying, oh, you guys are going to waste your time. You're going to spend all this time testing. You're going to have a whole bunch of negatives, and it's a waste of resources. That's not what they said. They said that, you know, there's going to be more testing, and there's going to be more positives. And, you know, the question is whether there's going to be, you know, 1,000 positives in a week or two. And I think that's not, if they don't get 1,000 in a week or two, it's not because there aren't 1,000 out there. It's because they're still gearing up. They don't have all the kits yet. They aren't, you know, really going at it quite yet. But that is what's going to happen. I mean, there are all these decisions being made about people not traveling and not going and, you know, not want to go on vacation, not want to go to Europe for spring break. And you know, are we going to go ahead and limit travel? And we're going to issue a travel warning. And they know that things are bad, like in Iran and in Italy. They know that those aren't the best place to go. But on the other hand, they really don't know if they're worse than Seattle or maybe New York, that they don't really know what the level is in those other areas, but they really haven't tested. They know that in Seattle it's not good, and they know that it's bad, but they don't really have a comparison. They don't know, well, is it bad in the sense that there's more in Seattle than there's other cities in the U.S., but it's not nearly as bad as it is in Europe, or is it the same? You know, is it just as bad in Seattle as it is in Milan? And, you know, these people, they're saying, don't fly to Italy for spring break, stay in Seattle. You know, that may not, you know, it will cost less money, but it may not be safer than the fly to Europe for spring break. So there are all these decisions. All these companies are canceling, you know, conferences. They're not going. And, you know, not having a lot of people in one place is probably a good idea no matter what. But they're, in many cases, they're doing it because they're worried that if they go to China, or if they go to Singapore, or if they go to Europe, or they go to the Middle East, that it's much riskier than it is staying in the United States. And the jury's still out on that. It's really not clear exactly how widespread this is. And the problem is that, number one, 85% of the cases are mild. I mean, that's not a problem for the 85%, but it's a problem for testing, because you really don't know that these people have the virus. You know that, you know, they're coughing a little bit, and it's still kind of flu season, and it's still kind of getting over, you know, respiratory illnesses. But if they were tested and you found out they were positive, then you'd realize that, you know, there's a lot of areas that really aren't all that safe, and they're not all concentrated in the ones that have the highest number of cases, because in some instances, they have the highest number of cases because that's where they're doing the most testing. And, sure. And they've got the highest number of exports because that's who they're testing for, you know, bringing it into the country. I mean, Spain was a good example of that, whereas, you know, 2 weeks ago, Spain had a grand total of, two cases. And then they started screening people that came from Italy, and they started getting positives. and they just reported their first death, and they've got 151 confirmed cases now, and they've got community spread, almost all of these have community spread. They just haven't tested for it.
Just got another one, Contra Costa County, the Bay Area in California. Case of unknown origin is another one.
And those are just going to keep piling up one right after the other. CDC knows it, and everybody knows it, is paying attention. And it's not a weaponized anything. This is a virus that's dump species, and you know, this polybasic plebiscite, the H5N1 picks up polybasic plebiscites, Newcastle disease picks it up. That's what these viruses do. You know, they don't need anybody to insert it there. They know how to recombine and how to acquire this, and they have selection. And then you look, and there they are. So.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you, Henry, and we'll keep watching it. We'll be back with everybody tomorrow night. Thanks, Henry, very much.
Okay, sounds good. Take care.
Okay. Dr. Henry Nyman, and yours truly, and thanks for being here. Back with you tomorrow night, 3 more hours of information that hopefully will make a difference in your lives. All right, talk soon.
My heart actually had contracted. But what was staggering about this was the speed in which it contracted. 2.5 months after I started taking Carnivora, that's when those amazing results started coming through. That's why I keep Carnivora very close to my heart. Excuse the pun.
Well, I'll take it. That works beautifully.
Owner Richard Ostro here. We're talking about the power of waking up your immune system, which has healed this gentleman's heart. Perhaps the immune system can be called one of the body's fiercest powers to heal. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-836-8735. That's 1-866-836-8735.
Known worldwide as the most consistently fascinating, informative, and unique program on radio, the Jeff Rentz program can be yours to listen to anytime, anywhere, whenever you want to hear it. For pennies a day, our subscribers can download any of Jeff's thousands of programs featuring a treasury of newsmakers, researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3, commercial-free, crystal-clear, 56-bit digital sound, and take these often unforgettable programs with them wherever they go. As a subscriber, you can also listen live at airtime, online, anywhere in the world, or browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legend.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong.